City Finance and Governance Committee. I'm chair. I'm accompanied by Councilmember Crawler and Councilmember Dallas Chance Johnson. Let's go ahead and get into the business agenda. Item 8.1A, discussion of remote attendance at council meetings.
Hi there, thank you. This is a follow-up to a discussion that you all had about a month ago. The new changes to the OPMA from House Bill 1329 says that council members can attend meetings remotely, but it's a good practice to have your council rules updated to allow that, to specify it doesn't have to be in times of an emergency. So you all asked me to prepare some language. I just realized they probably can't see me, but that's good.
We see you.
Okay.
Al knows who you are.
All right. You asked me to prepare some language, but you didn't want it to, you wanted it to kind of give the impression that people shouldn't do this all the time, that in-person attendance is preferable. And so I prepared something here. It shows you in track changes what the current rules say and what the change would say if you like it. City attorney reviewed it. She didn't make any changes to what I had proposed. And so I'll turn it over to you for discussion.
Okay. Page one, obviously in the blue. Start with Councilmember Crawler.
So why wouldn't we start section G with council remote attendance at the meeting, to be specific?
Okay.
Just a thought.
Sure.
Okay. I'm good with two. I am have a fading memory on 2A. Did we suggest that to regular or committee of the holes, or did you just kind of throw that out there?
You did not. I saw another city did write into their code a suggestion like that, and I thought it was a good idea for your consideration.
Okay, and I just didn't know if you talked to other council members.
I did not.
So I'm not plus or minus. I'm just trying to figure out why. So how do we arrange for the majority vote? Like the person asks and they show up for the meeting and then we decide no and too bad for you?
I could see a situation where somebody has already attended their maximum two meetings remotely and then say, oh, I have a situation where I'm going to be traveling for work or I'm caretaking. Can I have council consensus to have a few, one or however many additional?
So that would be to flex the rule on the two and two.
Yes.
And it is two for each, right? So they can be missing for four meetings?
A maximum of two regular or committee as a whole.
Or attending remotely for four meetings. So, I'm going to pass the baton and come back around.
I like the language. The only thing I'll say is that two meetings seems a little low. And I'm saying that because, now one of our council members had to miss because they were exposed to COVID or maybe they had COVID. And that's already one in a year. And, the same, one of the council members can't come because, they have to be remote because we don't want them to come here. And so that's already two. So it seems to me that two seems a little low. I just said five, because I'm trying to think of how many meetings do we have a year. It needs to be somewhere on the low end because I do agree that we should send a message that it's preferable that we're in person. But if there are circumstances where, you have to stay home, I want you to stay home and participate. So I don't know what others think. I think two is too low. I suggested five. 10 seemed too much. So somewhere.
Did you say of each?
Of total. Because the way she wrote it right now is either or. Like either of regular or committee.
Yes, regular or COW.
The other thing is I'll say the no later than 2 hours is fine to me. And I like the provision in D, which says if virtual connection is lost, keep meeting. Mm-hmm. Because, I don't want to be in a situation where we have to, stop in mid-meeting because somebody got disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I'd say I agree. Having been the person sit next to the person, and that's more than one incident that I'm aware of, and the impact would have been directly. And so, you know, I think all these things are written without the real concept of us being our own contagion. I mean, I think you still have the attendance and, you know, I think the intent, but the reality is, if this rule applied, and I'll use myself as an example, based on the contact, I would be already at the limit. There's been several scares along the way. And so part of it is not only a protection of yourself, but the protection of fellow council members. So, I mean, remotely, the whole point is to not abuse this and to appreciate it. And then, let alone professionally, you got to be somewhere. And I did that once, and it was brutal because it was a three-hour difference. Mm-hmm. And it happened to, you know, go long. You know, for me, maybe another draft of this with that consideration, because, again, this is real. We have examples of where it actually showed up. Anybody that actually showed up that day had no idea. And then it was, you know, and then it was confirmed later that it was. And then we all have kind of the responsibility, like, reading the song and all that stuff. So even if it's the rules on when you are contagious, if you're exposed, you know, what would be great is maybe if, I hate that we put this in documentation, but that is the world we live in. Mm-hmm. Whatever the rule is for kind of sheltering in until you're not contagious,
you'd like to see that.
However, we need a quarantine rule, quarantine days, and then have that be a data point for, you know, kind of a maximum or a minimum of five.
So I'm tempted to unpack this. There's one solution trying to solve three problems here. One, when you phoned in, it was in a state where we were telecommuting, and so why wouldn't you be able to remote in from whatever time zone? So that's why that was happening. That wasn't happening because you were sick or had a family issue. And under normal circumstances in earlier time, that frankly wasn't allowed. You just were away on business. So I'm just unpacking it a little bit. So then we've got a person who has, you know, one of us comes up with part of the major concern of this country and globe, a pandemic exposure. And I actually don't think this addresses that well enough. I want to encourage people to stay away if they've got COVID or think they've been exposed, period. Just want that for everybody who's present. Why would we invite more trouble?
Yeah.
And I think this might be too restrictive for that, but we ought to just call it out as it is and say, if, you know, you need to quarantine, which is different than I have a cold or I feel the flu or I'm taking care of someone, which are all not part of quarantining, then we ought to come up with a rule for that. So now we're down to, we have a basic principle that says, come to the meeting. It's a public meeting. The public deserves to come to the meeting and see you at the meeting. It shouldn't be, you know, a plethora of excuses I've heard before. But we're all feeling our way through some new material here. And I'm less inclined if there's family issues at home, and I've got some probably coming up in the future, and I don't think I'd want to be online if it's that pressing and that much pressure. So it's back to the principle of we should be attending in person. We ought to find a way to make exceptions, and I personally don't have any limit to addressing quarantine situations. Quarantine, not cat or cold, quarantine. Mm-hmm. And then if we're away on business, in my personal opinion, it's like it always was. You're away on business. This is a business. And I can see us making an exception if, like, it's the night you're appointing the new council president, they are on business and it makes sense and we all agree, but by exception, not by a TMC code or policy. Mm-hmm. So I see it from three different angles.
Yeah, I appreciate you speaking to my personal situation. Let me speak for myself. I chose to attend the meeting, and I think the whole point is not to abuse the situation. But prior to that, if you look at my record, I very seldom ever miss a meeting, ever. And so it was my choice to attend. I'm not conflating the two, but I'm having it be informed as one council member of seven what my considerations are. And so that's what I'm thinking about. Now, the quarantine, yeah, you got it right. That was my whole point. I think that's important to definitely acknowledge that.
And I want to be clear. I was away on business, too. I chose not to join the meeting because of the time zones, and I don't have any ill will about you joining because we were online at that time as a council. It didn't matter where you're calling it.
Yeah, but my point is I'll speak to my situation and my motivation, and actually my motivation in assessing this information, because I actually want to encourage more participation than less. And yes, it created a personal hardship for me, but that was something that I was prepared to do because it was important to me. But I mean, I would say that I think there's kind of a general consensus on where we're going. And I think what would really help is just to put maybe the information on quarantining as kind of an anchor versus some other excuse, because the reality is the world, and Kate's right, you sign up for this, your job is to attend. And trying to conflate a cold with this real serious issue around COVID, we need to be clear that that's not the same thing.
Okay, I'm hearing that you would like some very specific language about COVID quarantine in here, which I can do. I'm a little bit, I need clarity on the question of how many maximum per calendar year. Councilmember Delastrinos Johnson has suggested five.
I have no maximum if it's about quarantining for
sure.
Pandemic.
What if you had a separate provision that specifically spoke to COVID and COVID was not included in the five? It's like, if you have COVID, stay home.
Yeah, right.
Unlimited.
Don't share.
Stay home, quarantine, and this is like for this many days.
Okay.
Well, I've been with an employer that considers that HIPAA protected information, so it ought to just be you're not, you know, you just join from there and the rest of us understand. Obviously, there's some quarantine condition going on. That's what makes it easy if you're doing this by quarantine.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in some ways, though, too. As soon as you said that, I was like,
yeah, cool. You could have not. See you in 2 weeks.
I think, yeah.
I actually think you're losing.
I think we should put some language in there that speaks to, look, the goal is that we serve. And unless it's an extenuating circumstance. And I think you're right to have a separate provision for COVID, because, man, looking at other places, they're continuing to go like this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
So you don't need to have the 2 days on the COVID. I know that.
Okay.
So then the question is do we make all the other exceptions? And I personally step back and say, I don't think we do. I think your job is to be there in person. It's a meeting. We're all down here. It's all a sacrifice. I feel differently about working. Stuff happens at work and you can call in on the way down to whatever you have to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not hold people up or... So you can't, we're pretty thin on the bench if somebody can't be here.
I do want to allow for the situations for times when folks can't be here, like say, and I know it's like your guys' situation. I'll just say the situations you guys explained where you're out of state, you have the ability to attend if you want to.
Right.
You know, or if you so choose. And from my perspective, like I want council members to have that choice. And it's totally choice, because she's probably like couldn't function the next day. I remember the 3-hour time difference, but that was his choice. I mean, personally, if there's something, if I'm out of
state for whatever reason, and there's a meeting that I can or have the ability to attend, I likely would choose to attend unless I was on vacation, because I take the meetings very seriously, and I don't want to miss it if I have the opportunity to participate remotely. At least just that's my perspective, is that I would want a choice.
And so I'm taking the perspective of before there was COVID, we didn't have that choice. And the law didn't really say we had that choice.
Yeah.
So the only thing that changed was COVID, and we all started meeting online, right? Yeah, the law adjusted. So we all met online. And then now we said we're moving back to in-person again. To me, that just resets it back to the in-person, you know, application. And the only choice is, to me, prior to that, when he joined online, we were meeting online. So we were all equally meeting online.
Yeah.
And so now, if I go to AWC conference here next month, I'm not here. And even though there's an online feature for staff and whatnot, we aren't online. You need to be here or be paying attention to the business of whatever it is you're doing on your trip. That's why I didn't join from NLC, because I was doing Tukwila business at NLC.
Well, in this room, there's at least two people that think differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we should provide some options. And I think ultimately, to be kind of good stewards of the discussion, is to provide some options to COW. In the end, I think being able to show up and participate is important, and it is people's choice. You can still ask for an excuse, and that is a choice too. So I think while we have options, we should consider it, and so I would suggest that maybe we come up with some recommendations that we can take to COW.
Okay, I am clear on next steps, and you're saying you don't want these options presented to committee first, but I can move on to COW from here. Okay?
Yes, I think the others should weigh in as well, not just three of us.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
And we do hybrid right now because it hasn't been set back by the government, right?
June 1st, everything resets, but agencies are encouraged now to allow hybrid attendance by public and council members because the technology exists now. That was the other variable that changed when you were speaking. So now we can accommodate hybrid attendance where we couldn't before, just from a technology standpoint.
That's the step in between. Do they plan to go back to the original language?
No.
Interesting to see what the legislature does in that as well.
Yeah. Okay, so Vicki Carlson, Finance Director for the record. So tonight, Mr. Cullerton and Ms. Fort Brooks were here virtually. They're going to be updating you on our community outreach plan and introduce you to a tool called Balancing Act. It's a tool that we plan to use to gather community priorities and also share with the community the choices we have to make when we balance the budget. When we first set the tool up, as you'll see in the presentation you have in front of you, we were initially thinking we would present the 2022 budget because those are actual numbers. But upon further reflection, it really became apparent that what we need to do is reflect the reality of what we're facing in the upcoming budget cycle. And so I do have updated slides. I'll go ahead and hand these out now before I forget. And so what we did is we decided to present 2023 high level, basically to demonstrate the challenges we face as we draft and try and balance the 2023-2024 budget. So as the numbers you're looking at for 2023 that are going to be included in the tool are based on several assumptions, and I kind of want to just cover those assumptions so when you see those numbers. So first of all, it provides the same level of service as today with the same revenue sources. And what I mean by the same level of service today is that we still have several vacancies throughout the city. We have 7 police officers, 1 TIS person, and an extra labor position in city clerk's office that are still frozen. There's other reductions that are still in place, training and professional development, supplies and professional services, those are still at reduced levels. And it does reflect, again, we had to make some assumptions. It reflects using ARPA for the same programs council authorized in 2022 into 2023. And right now, ARPA is currently being utilized to unfreeze several positions in parks, recreation, streets, and DCD to return service levels that were either had been reduced or limited because of the pandemic. And ARPA is also being used to fund a 13th position in fire to maintain that minimum staffing. So the estimated budget that you see before is based on what we know today. We do expect CPI to be high, and so when we looked last time, it was 8%. So what's reflected in these numbers is an 8% increase for salaries and benefits. When we get the June CPI, which is what our labor contracts are based on, it could be higher than 8%. It could be lower than 8%. But right now, CPI is still trending up, but not as fast as it had been. It had been a pretty steep curve for a while. It's still up, going up, but not as steep. So we'll know in a couple of months what CPI really comes in at. Expenditures we have adjusted, but we didn't reflect the full 8% increase because we always continue to look for efficiencies where we can. For revenues, we've increased those revenue sources that we can legitimately increase. But we've also held the line on ones that are not growing and some that we know are trending down. We've continued that downward trend. And as an example, the telephone tax. We know that's declining, so we're going to continue that trend. Again, this is a high-level estimate for illustrative purposes, but really we do expect a significant gap, and this is what this represents. It shows you that there's going to have to be hard decisions made in this upcoming biennium. And with that, that's my introduction. So I'm going to be turning it over to Mr. Cullerton and Ms. Fort Brooks, who are going to walk you through the outreach plan and the actual balancing act tool.
All right. Good evening. Nyesha Fort Brooks, manager. Committee members, 3 weeks ago, to review the budget outreach. We were back again this by the committee, the foundation of the budget outreach, which Vicki briefly mentioned. As we mentioned a few weeks ago, we are developing a presentation that will be turned into a video to provide the community with basic budget information before they are encouraged to use the online tool to allow them to provide their priorities for the next biennial budget. The video and online tool will be available in the top three languages spoken, English, Spanish, and Vietnamese. And we're also working on Somali as well. You'll remember we have a number of activities associated with the budget outreach effort, such as gathering input at See You in the Park events and utilizing our various social media platforms. Just a couple examples to name a few. The video which this presentation will become is the foundation of all the outreach, so it is key that we get it right. So this evening we are feedback from you all before presenting to the council next Monday, May 16th. I will start the high-level overview of the presentation, and Tony Cullerton, Deputy Finance Director, will jump in as well. So the budget presentation will provide a high-level overview of the biennial budget, which includes the American Rescue Plan Act, which is known as ARPA. Tony will highlight financial graphs and an introduction to the Online Balancing Tool Act to help assist in public outreach. On the next slide, we are guided by Tequila's adopted strategic plans, goals, and objectives, as well as the adopted equity policy, both of which you all have seen before. We're going to go on to the next slide. I just mentioned the equity policy, as you see here presented in front of you. And so now we are going to go on some basic 101 before I kick it off to Tony. Next slide, please. The city is on a biennial budget cycle, which means we budget for 2 years at a time rather than just one. And this allows us to plan and anticipate funding needs for further into the future. So now I'm going to invite Tony Cullerton, Deputy Finance Director, to lead the remaining of this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Nyesha. For the record, Tony Cullerton, Deputy Finance Director. I apologize for the slow slide changes. There seems to be a little delay. Anyway, moving forward, the purpose of the fund description slide is to provide a brief overview of the city's different types of funds. So it's to be expected that some of the people we present to may not be up to speed on governmental accounting. So we do provide this as general knowledge. However, our focus will be on the general fund. Okay. The general fund 2023 revenue slide here, this is a snapshot of the city's 2023 estimated revenues. On the left, you'll see that 70% of the city's revenues are derived from taxes. Additionally, the state shared revenues are primarily made up of sales tax mitigation payments, the Seattle City Light Agreement, and grant revenues. The transfers in that we see there are for debt service associated with the public safety plan. Now, because the taxes make up such a large portion of the city's revenues, we've identified and displayed the major taxes, with sales tax and property tax being significantly the largest tax revenue stream. Okay, the ARPA slide, this is a little background on what the America Rescue Plan Act is and how much money the city receives. We also share the period of availability for spending. And this slide essentially sets up the next slide that shows the different areas that the city applied ARPA funding to. So while $5.7 million, you know, may sound like a lot of money, which it is, it's not nearly as significant as some of the surrounding cities received. The funding allocation was primarily based on population. So while Tukwila supports a large daytime population, the allocation was based on Tukwila's 20,000 residents. Here's a list of the areas where the city applied the 2021 ARPA funding. So I believe what's important here is that overwhelmingly, the funding was applied to support and enhance programs, not for bureaucratic overhead of managing the grant funds. So you can see community rent and utility assistance was at the top of our list. Also, you see the restoration of the neighborhood traffic calming program and support to firefighter staffing. And we also applied funds to maintaining parks and streets. You see some of the other areas here as well. So these next two slides are just simply a listing of the general fund departments, and it gives a brief description, high-level description of each department. Okay, enough said there. The general fund department's 2023 budget expense. This is a graph that shows the general fund departments and their annual budgets. So from this slide, the public will quickly and easily be able to see the departments and their funding levels. And so you can see that the city's police and fire department are prioritized by the city's budget. This general fund by department, this is the same slide, but it displays the allocation by percentage. And what we're depicting here is that, well, primarily police, fire, public works, you see they have the largest budgets. Essentially, public safety makes up about 65% of the city's budget. And this is a snapshot of what the Balancing Act tool looks like that I'll be demonstrating next. Give you a heads up where we're going with that. And this is an outreach resource slide. These are a few budget outreach resources that provide additional information about the budgeting process. So that is the slide presentation, and from there, we're going to roll into the Balancing Act tool.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
Yep.
Why aren't the Balancing Act tool covers identical to yours? In other words, make yours if you can't adjust this.
We can absolutely make that adjustment. Yes, that's a great suggestion.
Easy visual for the public.
Yes. Okay. That's a great. I'm going to make a note.
I apologize. Can I get that one more time? I just didn't hear it.
I'll send you a note, Tony.
Thank you. Okay, so no change with that, and here we go. So this simulation, we're going to look at our preview. Okay, so when they log into the tool, this is what they're going to be greeted with. So we have a welcome to the balancing app. We have the city's logo. It may be kind of hard for you to see the disclaimer, but up there we talk about that the service level simulations that we're going to look at are for illustrative purposes only, and they don't reflect city council's decisions at this time. This is a budget simulation, and it's a way for them to be able to learn about spending, provide input on revenues and expenses. We have some arrows to the right that we direct them to expand the categories and see the subcategories, and this is where they're going to go ahead and submit their feedback. So they click continue. They have a question here of, are you a resident, yes or no? They can choose to answer that or not, and then they come into the tool. So what we start out with, we can see we're starting with a $5.6 million deficit. Here on the left is what we call a donut of where our money goes, and it is in correlation to the spending here.
There's a question.
Yeah.
Vicki, can you explain the significance of where we start at?
So we start, as I mentioned in my introduction, we do anticipate starting with a deficit for 2023. Right now, very high level, it's based at $5.6 million. That could change. It could be higher. It could be lower. But it represents that we do have a significant budget gap that we're expecting for 2023, which is going to result in some difficult and challenging decisions that will have to be made.
And the things that contribute to that are CPI, as you've mentioned.
Yeah, the biggest driver on the expenditure side is CPI, which is Consumer Price Index. That is what all of our labor contracts are based off of. In past years, we've been able to hold supplies and services at zero growth, but with CPI as high as it is, that CPI is going to bleed through the entire organization. It's not going to be able to be just restricted to salaries and benefits. And just as a reminder, as a city, we provide services, and services are provided by people. So that is the bulk of our budget. And on the revenue side, our biggest two revenue sources are property taxes and sales tax. Property tax is restricted by state law to a 1% growth plus new construction. We're not going to get an 8% growth out of that. We've never had that much new construction to equal that high of an increase in property taxes. And sales tax, the tricky part with that is, yes, prices are up. So on the one hand, you could theoretically apply an 8% increase, but you also have to balance that to people's spending power. If their salaries aren't keeping up with that, they may be spending higher prices but purchasing less. So we have to balance those two concepts as we estimate what our sales tax revenue is going to be.
Yes, sorry to stop you. And then I think another contribution, at least based on the slides, is, you know, as we all recognize, ARPA is a one-time investment.
Yes.
Which creates a bow wave. And we got, you know, the question, the assumption is that what we highlighted as a priority, because that's really where we heard from the community, that priority would continue in the future. And with that, and here's the, to me, the ringer is this: doing it by population just lets us know that our expenses aren't necessarily captured in that allocation.
Correct.
All right. Sorry, Johnny.
Okay. Thank you. And so you see, we're starting with that $5.6 million deficit. When we look at spending on the right, $76 million. We're going to look closer at this. But you see, our revenues are $71 estimated revenues. So that's how we're starting with the deficit. So the visual here for the residents or the people that get involved, participate, it's color-coded matching. The police are the biggest areas. Police, we can see that $21.3 million. We have fire 15.3, public works, 7.8. So it is kind of color-coded. You get the gist of that. Moving down to the revenues, we start off with the different revenues. This is a bar as opposed to a donut. And so this bar is the taxes, the biggest revenue, license and permits, purple. So you can kind of see at a glance previous revenues and then we see them here. Each of these information buttons are something for them to click on to get more information. So here it says you can use, you can add additional revenues with your suggestions here. And so they would click on the down arrow. This is where they can free flow and just type high level, whatever they want. They can add a revenue, an amount here. So high level stuff. When we go into our taxes, we have the different taxes here, the sales taxes, property taxes, utility tax. And what they can do here, you keep your eye on the 5.6. As I click on here, they can use a slider and say, we want to increase sales tax. That is moving it, you know, into the green. Or they can reduce it this way. Director Carlson talked about property tax and the 1% limit, but we also allowed the slider for here. We do it for utility tax. We did lock down admission tax. They're not able to make a contribution there. The gambling excise tax, they are able to add to that. License and permits, we have a high level here. It talks about what makes up license and permits. So it's business licensing, building permits, rental housing, franchise fees. They can then click in to the license and permits, move the slider. So here they're given an opportunity to make suggestions on revenues. The shared revenues, we talked a little bit about this in the slide presentation. So we want to just include information because everybody might not know what these are. And so we talked about the sales mitigation tax, the SLC, the grant revenues. When they come in here, these are things that the public really doesn't have a lot of input on. So we've locked that one down. Charges for services. Talking about recreation fees, DCD revenues, the plan check fees, reviews, court fines as well. And so again, we have the slider here for them to be able to give their input. You see their budget, the revenues are 1.3 million. You see that here. And as they move this, you see it starts calculating dollar amounts and adds the budget or reduces it. So we can see the change immediately right here. The other revenues are fines, penalties, investment earnings, rent concessions, those sorts of things. On the other revenues, not a lot for them to talk about with interest, fines, penalties, so we've locked that one down. You see, we talked about that for the indirect overhead cost allocation, if they're wondering what that is. This is, we give just a brief description of allocation paid by departments for overhead costs. Not much that they can do there. And then our transfers in, these are for debt payments. And they click in. Again, it's locked down, but they're able to see it's primarily for the public safety plan. And so those show our revenues of $74 million, and they can give feedback there. Coming over to the spending side, we offer the same dialog box here where they can add spending suggestions with the dollar amount, just free flow that. We give a brief overview of every department here, just talking a little bit about police department, and we'll do the same for fire, public works, that's all the same. So they will be able to come in to the police and drill in here. Instead of the slider, we opted to show 2%, 5%, and 10% cuts. So they have the budget of $21.3 million, we see it here. So they may suggest let's add 2% to the police. And they can click in here and see what that service level change is going to have. We started this presentation with the disclaimer that this does not represent council. This is to walk someone through it, but this is kind of an idea of what they would see. So if they wanted to cut PD by 2%, well, that 2% budget reduction is going to require the PD to convert a commission position to fill the urgent needs of one FTE. And so with each of the different service level cuts, they add to it. It includes the 2%, but then if we go to a 5%, we talk about additional service reductions. That would be the case. And so each of the departments participated in the exercise and gave examples of what that service level cut would be, as well as if the resident wanted to add, they could go and say, so at the 5%, in addition to all the items on the 2% increase, we could talk about the additional service levels that that would provide. So we go through and do that for every department. The mayor's office, we talk a little bit about what they are, and then we talk about what the different service levels will be if they do a cut or if they do an add. So this is just an interactive tool for the residents to do to give information. At the end of this, when they go to submit it, by law, the city needs to submit a balanced budget. So if they were to submit this with this $2 million deficit based on changes they made, they're going to get this error message that says they can't submit it with a deficit. So they're going to have to come back and make changes. Now, that is an option. We've set it up like that because we're required by law to provide a balanced budget. So we let them go through the exercise. If a decision is made to allow people, because we'll feel we get more responses, to allow them to submit a budget in a deficit, we can make that change. But one thing that I think is worth mentioning is that based on this deficit of that $6.5 million, if every department took a 5% cut, that would be a savings of about $3.4 million. That would not get us to be balanced. And so a 10% cut would be about $10% cut would be about $6.8 million. So we don't need a 10% cut, but we need more than a 5% cut. And so, you know, where I'm going with this is that we are going to need, for them to balance this budget, realistically, they are going to have to increase revenues somewhere. So just keep that in mind. And then once we see them in the green, they're able to submit. And we're going to be collecting this information, so we ask that they provide feedback. They're not obligated to, but we give them the option to give us the age, gender. Here we want the neighborhood that they're in, type that in, an email address if they like. Click on Not a Robot. For tonight, we're currently in the preview mode, so we haven't published this version, so no submission is going to be available. But they are in green, so they would be able to submit once we go live with that. So that is the presentation, and we can take questions.
Questions?
Oh, yeah. Functionally, when you were on there moving the slider around, were you only on one item?
Let me go through to make sure. So here we are, and we were talking about the slider, so we're going to be on the revenue side. So let's look at taxes. So here we have a few different taxes, not admission, but these. And so I'm just on sales tax here, or I'm on property tax here.
Okay. And you're moving it by, is it green and blue and red buttons? Green goes to, okay, so that's how you're moving. Okay.
Yep. So it's the green to increase it and red to decrease.
Okay, gotcha. And then the only other question I had was, do you expect people to go online and fill these out independently? Or are you expecting, like, to teach a group of 6 or 7 people and they sit there together and go, well, let's mess with the police department and, you know, and then I guess we've never had some taxes. How do you expect that to go?
Good question. So I'm going to also let Naisha speak on this, but let me just take the first crack at this one. How I envision it is that we are going to put this on the website online so they can go online and do this independently. We're going to be doing outreach presentations. So if we're going to commissions meetings, we will talk to a group there. If we have events at the park or something, we would then talk to a group of people and ask people to come and do it. We could have people standing by helping them. You know, I can attend and walk them through that. Both Naisha and I will be at commission meetings, talk through that. So one-on-one is available online, also in groups as we roll this out. It's all part of our rollout, but I'll let Naisha pick it up from there and just add something.
And then my last question is, are you hoping that they'll have an impression like, wow, this is really complicated and difficult, I appreciate what goes on in city government? Or are you expecting to, like, look at some of these results and go, these are good ideas?
Okay. Yeah, good question. We are going to look at the results. I believe the purpose of this is to solicit input from the residents on how they want them. So, yes, I do expect us to look at the responses and say they're good ideas. I think as a byproduct, It's an engaging exercise, especially if we went to high schools and talked to the kids about local government, to let them see what it takes to balance a budget. And starting off with this deficit is a challenge that we would go through, but it also gives them some insight to the challenges we have, as well as the different revenues and expenses, and really what it takes to balance a budget. Hard decisions to make.
And I lied, I got one more question. Mandates, they don't appear to be identified. You have areas where they don't get any choice, but there's mandates that happen in all of these categories.
Correct. The challenge we face is we want to get out in the community as quickly as possible so we have time to gather this input. Right. And at some point, you just have to build the tools what you have. We found this tool just a few short weeks ago.
That's great.
Didn't realize it was out there. And I do want to say anecdotally, this is the first time our low population has actually benefited us, because the cost of this tool is based on your population.
Yes.
And so very, very inexpensive. So for the first time, I'm like, score. Kind of excited about that. But yeah, there's so much more information we could put into this. And I think if we're successful with this, it's something we can continue to build on and make it better the next time.
You pretty much acknowledged everything, Tony. Outreach. The nice thing is we know that our young people know how to deal with online tools, so they're really good to navigate those systems. It's very user-friendly. I do want to acknowledge that we can get this. We as a city will have to get the information translated. And so if my language is Hispanic, I wanted to review this, I would have the capability to read it in Spanish. Not only just to see you in the parks, I feel like this is a great opportunity to share this information at the Juneteenth event that's going to be coming up next month. So there's a lot of creative ways where we can send out information packets, little half sheets to the different elementary schools, given that the school year is almost over, and I know that their capacity is full. So I want to be realistic about that outreach, but I know as a parent, when I see those flyers come in my daughter's home folders, I do review them and I take initiative to talk about it. And then if you are out in the community talking to your constituents, this is an opportunity to bring it up on your mobile phone and share it with them, engage with them. And it's a great opportunity to build relationships with new community members that you haven't done so before in the past.
Customer Dennis.
Is this the primary way that the community is going to give their input to us, or are there still other ways? Because I could imagine that there are people that might find it difficult to use this tool, and I'm just wondering if our avenues are broader to receive feedback in other ways other than just this tool.
Absolutely. This is just one added benefit to reach our populations who don't typically show up to our meetings, but know how to navigate online information on their smartphones and iPhones. Like Tony mentioned, he and I will be out in the community talking to all of our boards and commissions, our community-based organizations, and also encouraging city staff to encourage, if they're out in the community and they're engaging, to do that public outreach themselves. It's definitely going to take all of us to do this work, so it's a real opportunity to hear their input. We will continue to fluctuate, pivot, and change to make sure that we can make it out. We will also have this information available on the city website. And so if you all have more creative, innovative ways that we haven't thought of, we are always open and to hearing your feedback as well.
I think it would be helpful to similar as there's like that information tab that explains like the details of each of the different programs that we have here at the city, for the deficit, like that opening page where it says deficit, might be good to have one of those like info tabs to say we're starting at a deficit because this. Just that information for people to understand why they come in and it's already
in the hole.
I know. I was like, oh, wait, hold up. This thing is broken.
Jump right into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have more?
No. Okay. Go ahead.
So the one thing I would add, and good question, and I know we're getting started, love it. The last, when you submit and you get the message, I think we set a big old stop sign. Because what it looked like was an error, and then somebody's like, well, did I do something wrong? Versus this is the purpose, is to get to a balanced budget. So we're stopping, go back, you know, everybody plays Monopoly, go back to the start. I think it should be pretty clear, so no one's saying, hey, I had an error message. Can we get technology to come in and fix it? We should be pretty clear, because that is our fiduciary responsibility. And for us, if we made that decision, there would be a big stop sign and say, go back to.
Got it. That makes sense. We'll have to see what the capabilities are to see if that's an option. But I completely see what you're getting at.
And then the other thing, and this is not a question, but I mean, and this is time and it's a tool, but there were some policy decisions that we made that could be a qualifier, but then it becomes a lot more information. So, for example, permitting, we do have a kind of a resident kind of range, and same is true for some of the utilities. But those are kind of nuances, but it might be something like an add-on. You know, here's some of the policies that were passed on behalf of residents of the community, and considerations around senior rate, residential rate, and especially thinking about like personal service. So.
It's really obvious when you look at pie charts and bar charts that police and fire and public works are the most expensive areas. So the first instinct, if nobody educates someone, is to cut those as much as possible. And given recent last couple of years about defunding police, et cetera, I have a little concern that some of the responses will levitate towards that. And the only ask I would have is to at least give them some equations. Like we know how many police persons per 1,000 to 10,000, because our daytime is 20, our nighttime is 20,000 plus, give or take one, and that our daytime is, I don't know if it's gotten back to 150 or not, and that's why the policing coverage is higher. Just to give them an idea that we are not blown out of proportion compared to other cities. Anything that lets them understand the ratio is like that at other cities. So the one, just the ratio of police to population, and that second one would be other cities have similar formulas. So they know, like, given all the headlines the last 2 years, what the heck is Tequila doing, man? The police is off the risper scale compared to everybody else. It feels like a human nature that they'd levitate towards that without a little bit of guidance.
Yeah, even if it comes in the form of, and I think they mentioned it, like per person, right? And I mean, the same is true for, honestly, roads and other things.
Yeah.
We are impacted by the 150,000 population.
Yeah, absolutely.
As angry as people are that if they go to the store, the car gets broken into. Like, that all plays into personnel and coverage, all that. So I know it's already a blunt tool, the way it's designed. So, with that in consideration, and honestly, in the end, I know we have to make a decision and we'll be informed by, but the more information we provide, it could help the discussion because we are uniquely situated like this. And I don't know that there's any other city that sees that significant increase in the daytime population. And that includes safety for employees that come here.
But they would have ratios that would match properly.
Yeah, ratios.
So they go, oh, I get this. This is reasonable because. Okay.
When someone submits, or even in the video that you guys are going to be creating about how to use the tool, which I think I love that addition. At the end, when someone submits, I think it's important to let them know that their feedback is going to be reviewed by council, or is being collected so that we can utilize that. And even if there's information on, like, the city council will be having budget discussions, follow the city's website to find out more on when those meetings are, or something about, like, directing them if they want to follow the process beyond just that tool. I want them to, like, come to our meetings and
want to see the follow-up of what where their feedback goes, something of that sort.
Yeah, and I think on that same point, we've already received feedback from the high school. A lot of feedback, a lot of valuable feedback, and a lot of feedback that spoke to public safety and universal safety. So that's already a consideration based on what we've already received, and we have an obligation to respond to that as well as we receive it. So I think there's a way to, depending on the groups, you can actually facilitate information saying, yeah, we've already received 80 letters or more, I can't remember, with these themes, with this kind of breakdown. And so if you go back, you can refer to that.
Well, our thought is that you had some areas where there is free form, mm-hmm. filling out ideas. It'd be nice to know as council that we could look at what some of those ideas were. Right.
I know we get a lot of demographic information and all kinds of statistical information. I'm sure we get the comments as well.
Right.
Yeah. And then.
I don't know, they just give us an idea. You know, people have really innovative ideas. That they, well, Portland does this. I'd love to know.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you
for your feedback, and we will be making adjustments to this, but appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
Any miscellaneous? All right. These are concluded. Thank you.